Hello, and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. I am joined here with Charlie.
What's up? Hello.
And today we're going to be talking a little bit about jailbreaking the Switch and our experience with it since we have both jailbroken our Switches now. Can I say that? Jailbroken?
I think jailbroken usually refers to phones, specifically iPhone, but it's basically jailbreaking. It's allowing you to run unlicensed games on the Nintendo Switch. So in our previous podcast, we called it Hacking the Switch. So this podcast episode is a follow-up to the previous episode. If you haven't listened to that and you're interested in some more basic information about how hacking the Switch works and why you do that, definitely go back and check out the previous podcast. But when we recorded that, we had not actually gone through the process of hacking our Switch.
Right.
Now, both of us have done that, so we have firsthand experience on what's involved going through that process, how we got it set up, what the advantages and downsides to that are. So now it's a little bit more practical now that we and some other people in the CGF group have also hacked their Switches.
Right. And we both followed pretty much the same procedure for doing this. A couple of the people in the group did things differently than we did using, what is it, Team Executors.
Right.
Dongle and SXOS.
Yep.
We're using Atmosphere.
Yep.
And we both bought the same, dongle and
right.
jig.
Yep.
Which is pretty slick. I like how the jig slides into the dongle and I can just throw it in my Switch carrying case and carry it with me.
Yeah, so just to recap really quickly, for anyone who's unfamiliar with what we're talking about, we purchased, I think, about 65 RMB, which is equivalent to about $10 on Taobao. This is a small dongle device, which has the jig, which is required to get the Switch into the mode where it can run unlicensed software. And basically with that dongle and the jig, you have everything you need to hack your Switch.
Right.
The only requirement is that you have a Switch which was manufactured prior to, I think, July of 2018 this year. So if you have a Switch and you're not sure if you can hack it, if you purchased it prior to July, there's 100% chance that you can hack it. And if you purchased it around that time, then you may still be able to hack it. You would have to check the serial number, and you can find that information online by inputting your Switch serial number, and it'll tell you if it's vulnerable to the hack or not.
The serial number is the number on the bottom of the Switch, I think, by the vent, right?
I think that's right. Yeah. Yep. So we both have vulnerable Switches, and man, I mean, living that hacked Switch life, it is sweet.
Living the dream.
Yeah, it is everything that we hoped it would be. In the previous podcast, we talked about why we're both committed to hacking our Switches. There are some known downsides to hacking the Switch, and after doing a cost, benefit analysis, we both agree that it was worth the trouble, and having the ability to have perspective now after having done it and looking back on the calculus of, should we do it or should we not do it? Because you lose online play. I mean, you lose online completely. You lose the eShop, you lose multiplayer, you lose, those things, but you gain so much more. And so in this podcast, we'll talk a little bit about our experience with that and what it's been like for other people who might be interested in doing this.
Right. I personally was a little concerned about giving up online, but I have not regretted it at all since I got it. I think the benefits vastly outweigh giving up online. I mean, one slight concern is that maybe Smash Bros. Will have a really great online component. But like the one game I specifically bought for online play was Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
And I don't regret giving that up. I mean, it was fun, but honestly, online on the Switch doesn't work that well.
It really doesn't.
I mean, we got this accelerator recently that I think could potentially have changed my experience with playing online, but I'm not missing it, dude. I mean, I have enough other games on other platforms to play online that I'm not like hurting because I don't have it on the Switch. And I don't think it's what this Switch excels at.
So. No, I mean, not only is it not what the Switch excels at, I think it's what the Switch does exceptionally poorly.
Right.
When you compare to other platforms like PlayStation 4 or Steam or even Xbox One, which very few people play here, but the online still works a lot better than Switch.
Right. Oh, but speaking of Steam and jailbreaking the Switch, I think we should mention a couple of cool things that we've seen people do with their cracked Switches. And I saw a guy working on streaming Steam to his Switch.
Oh, I saw that also. Yeah, I saw a screenshot on Reddit. Right. That's pretty cool. It's that would pretty be neat.
Cool. That would be really cool, being able to just stream your library of, even if it's from your home or whatever. It's like, it's a pretty slick kind of concept to have in mind.
It is. I mean, in general, when you hack your Switch, it just opens up the door to so many exciting possibilities, many of which are have still not really come to fruition.
Right.
Kodi is one example. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So for anyone who's unfamiliar, Kodi is a media player front end, which is available on many platforms, Mac, Linux, Windows. And it allows you to, you can save media files on your Switch, eventually movies, TV shows, whatever you want to watch, and then have a Netflix sort of interface to download subtitles and to control playback and basically just have a nice format for controlling media. And having Switch is going to be great.
Having that on the go is like a huge thing, I think. I mean, just having access to a few of your favorite games and then, you know, maybe on a long train ride watching a TV show or something, either by yourself or with your buddy or whatever, just setting it up on a train ride and watching Futurama or like Rick and Morty or watching a cool movie or whatever.
Yeah, really cool. It seems like the format of Switch is kind of ideal for that. It's a small device. It's pretty lightweight, fits into a bag very easily. It's widescreen, pretty good battery life. It seems just kind of ideal. I mean, it's a tablet essentially, but it's a small tablet, which is sort of just the right aspect ratio, just the right size. So I think it'll work really great as a media player. But this Kodi is an example of something which is on the horizon, which hasn't kind of been available yet. There is actually a working version of Kodi that I've seen, and there are some other media players, but it's not quite there yet.
Right.
So I think with given some more time, that will certainly be a reality on Switch and many other exciting things as well. I mean, streaming Steam games to your Switch, it looks like it'll be practical and feasible in the near future.
Right.
And who knows what else is coming? You know, I mean, it's really hard to speculate what's going to happen, but it's going to be a lot of things. That's for sure.
You got a comic book reader on there, right?
I haven't loaded it, but there is one. Yeah, there's okay. Comic books are not really my thing, but there's a CBR reader, and CBR is the file format, which is preferred for comic books. So if that's something you're into, it seems like Switch is a great format for that as well.
Yeah, and having that Kodi and like games on there really make it just awesome entertainment device on the go.
Yeah, the Switch by itself is kind of like Kindle size. You know, I mean, you wouldn't even need the Joy-Cons. You could just use the touchscreen and just to have something like that to travel with, which
turn it
is great.
On its side.
Yeah, it's like an extra large phone. You know, it's right in between like a phone and a tablet.
Right.
In terms of the size.
Other things I've seen have been, I mean, one of the first things I noticed, I think I commented on it in our last podcast about this, was Postal, which I still haven't been able to get up and running. But I've also seen some other games that people got running on there, such as Doom 3, which is kind of cool, running at about 30 frames per second. We've seen Mario Galaxy on there, which is cool. And I even saw someone playing Fallout 1 on there, which is
Oh, that is pretty cool. Yeah. That is pretty cool. So a lot of these are like homebrew games, which are kind of ported to Switch, like Postal is an example of that.
Yeah.
And there are certainly, there's a long list of those. Some of this stuff gets like a little bit hacky, you know what I mean? In terms of some of the games which are ported through, you know, GitHub or sites like this onto Switch, they kind of work, but sometimes certain functionality is a little problematic. Some things work, some things don't. They're a work in progress. But if you're running just game backups, which is, you know, basically pirating Switch games, that works flawlessly.
Well, okay, I have to make one comment about that. It has worked flawlessly for the most part. Occasionally, when using Tinfoil, which is the homebrew app you use to install NSPs, I have had issues where some NSPs don't work for whatever reason. And I have had a couple of files show up on my launcher or whatever in the user interface where it just shows a loading thing. And I don't know if you've seen this or not.
You mentioned that actually in the discussion group, and someone else commented and said that he's seen that happen and he doesn't even have a hacked Switch.
Right.
So it seems like it might be some kind of Switch problem, which is unrelated to hacking the Switch.
I don't know, but I can't remove those files because unlike most games where if you press the plus button or whatever to bring up the file management, I can't do that. It's just grayed out option on those.
So those are just stuck on your launcher? Didn't he say you have to restart Switch to fix that?
He said restart the Switch, but I've restarted the Switch like several times since then. and also had a new one pop up trying to install Goragoa onto the Switch.
That's strange. I've installed Goragoa. I haven't had that problem. I've probably loaded maybe 20 games on my Switch, and I haven't experienced that yet. Actually, I haven't experienced a single problem with any of the games I've loaded. Every single one of the games that I've loaded has worked without issue. I've tested them all. I've run them all.
I mean, we're both running XFAT on our SD card, right? Are you FAT32?
I think I might be FAT32.
But you haven't had to use the NS splitter or whatever.
No, right? I haven't. Yeah. So for people who are unfamiliar, there are two different file formats for Switch games, and that's XCI and NSP. NSP, I think, is kind of the preferred file format to get, and that has 100% compatibility. You don't need to convert anything. If you get XCI files, then there are file converters online where you can convert from XCI into NSP file format, and then you can load those with tinfoil. I think that eventually tinfoil will support XCI, but...
I know SXOS supports XCI.
Yeah, I don't see the point in using XCI at all. I mean, if you can get an NSP, then just do that.
The only reason to... I mean, if it supported XCI, it would make finding... files easier because it doesn't matter what format they are, but the only reason to find NSP is just that it's easier to use NSP right now because XCI is not supported by tinfoil.
Well, every single game that I've wanted, I've found in NSP. So I've found no reason to mess with XCI files at all.
Yeah, but to be fair, you have like a private tracker with access to all of these files, and not everybody has that. And sometimes I've had trouble finding the files that I want. I don't have that. So, and I know other people have had difficulty tracking down certain NSP files. A lot of us have found XCI files that we haven't immediately found an NSP file for.
So since you've cracked your Switch, what has the process been like for you? I mean, did you have any troubles getting it set up, or was it any different from how we talked about in our previous podcast?
I mean, like I said, for whatever reason, the dongle was like loose in there, and I didn't want to break anything. I was nervous to put it in, brought it over, and you just shoved it right in there and it went in. That was my only issue.
You're like, it doesn't fit. I'm like, well, yeah, you weren't like putting it in properly,
but it like required a good amount of force to get in there. And beyond that, after I did that, I had a little bit difficulty moving a couple of the files around and getting everything set up, but it was nothing more than like a half hour of figuring out what I needed. It's really slick how you can go on SD setup and kind of configure what you want on there and download a zip file that like has everything in there.
Yeah, so we mentioned this on our previous podcast. We should definitely mention it again because this is a website which I use as well. It's sdsetup.com. It's basically Nynite for the Nintendo Switch.
It's what?
Do you know what Nynite is for Windows?
No.
So it's an application which allows you to install programs automatically in the background.
Right.
So for example, if you install Windows, you can use Nynite to install Windows and install antivirus and WinZip and a long list of other applications.
All at once.
Yeah, all at once. And so you use a website with radio boxes where you just tick whatever apps you want and it will automatically install all that stuff in one go. And that's exactly how SD Setup works for people who have cracked Switches. So you can select if you want to use RainX or Atmosphere or SXOS or whatever you want, tinfoil. There's a long list of 30 or 40 different applications which you can install. And I think even Postal's in that list and some homebrew games are in that list as well. And so you can get everything just in one shot and it makes it super easy to get set up. Basically, if someone were to hand me a Switch that had not been cracked, within like 15 minutes, I could have it cracked and totally set up and done.
Yeah.
So really quick, really easy. Requires nothing more than the dongle, the jig, and an SD card that's formatted properly. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, even if somebody comes up to you, you have the dongle on you. You could crack their Switch like immediately just with your dongle.
Right.
And then they just need to put the files on their SD card.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So pretty simple.
Right.
Really
so
straightforward.
Once I got it set up, I just started loading games on it to just check it out, see how it worked, see if there were any problems. And a bit to my surprise, I mean, there were no issues at all. I really didn't run into a single problem. All the games loaded correctly. I immediately found a torrent file, which had like 1.9 terabytes of Switch games. And I just selected the games I wanted. I think the total size of everything was around 100 gigabytes. And that included Skyrim and Breath of the Wild, Doom. A couple of pretty large games. I don't think I got Doom, but I mean, I would like to check it out. It's, I finished it on PC, so it's not something I'm,
you just want to check it out.
Yeah, kind of like to check it out, but it's not something I really need to play right now. But in any case, found pretty much every game I wanted in NSP format, and it's just been working really good for me so far. Also, for those listening to this, you know, we are in China on the issue of piracy. Nintendo Switch is not available here legally at all. Every single Nintendo Switch which you can buy in China is a gray market item, which comes illegally imported from another place, Taiwan, right. Japan, or Hong Kong. And so
we're, you can't, technically not breaking any laws.
There, well, I don't know about that, but you can't buy, you can't buy games here legally. You can't buy Switch here legally. If you're using Nintendo Online, you're necessarily connecting to servers which are outside of China. And that's one of the big reasons why online performance is so bad here.
Right.
I mean, it's not great anywhere. You find people complaining all around the world about Switch Online.
Right.
Including performance. You know, I mean, like latency, you know, connection problems. These kind of issues are systemic to the Nintendo Switch. So it has nothing to do with China. But inside China, we kind of have to go through sort of a lot of hassle to buy games. I mean, if you want to buy a game for Nintendo Switch Online, you can't use a Chinese credit card. You got to go jump through some hoops. You got to use a foreign credit card, or you have to use sort of a PayPal workaround, or on Taobao, you have to buy it from some sort of shady vendor who's maybe breaking the law just to even get you the eShop credit to begin with. So basically, the point is that if you're inside China, you're kind of skirting a lot of rules to begin with, no matter what way you do it. So there is no really legit way to do this in China to begin with. So, I mean, there is a little bit of ethical concern around hacking the Switch and acquiring games through these means. I just wanted to address that directly. Both of us, before hacking our Switch, had spent many hundreds of dollars on games on the eShop. You mentioned Splatoon 2. I mean, we bought Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild. I mean, dozens of games. I think I purchased probably 30 or so Nintendo Switch games.
Some games we purchased multiple times, like Dead Cells.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and we're still purchasing games on Steam or, you know, where available. So it's not as if we're actively trying to avoid giving money to publishers or anything.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I feel like had Nintendo not, you know, made the decisions that it did, then maybe I wouldn't have hacked the Switch to begin with. You know, right. Maybe if online was really good, maybe if Virtual Console was available.
Maybe if eShop was a joy to go through. There's no ratings. There's all kinds of issues with the eShop, you know, and it's getting loaded, like bloated with like
garbage.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So it's kind of, and without ratings or anything to view there, without even being able to easily access the eShop.
Right.
It's kind of like, well, whatever. I'm fine with giving that up.
Yeah. Nintendo's decisions on a lot of these things have been so discouraging that it makes hacking the Switch a little bit of an easier decision, you know?
Yeah.
Both of us, we'll talk about this later, but we both just got PS4s recently.
Been a joy.
Yeah, which has been great. And I mean, you can hack the PS4. You can do it, you know, and you can load games on it.
We're not doing it.
We're not doing it. Yeah, exactly. Because the sacrifices you make for that are just not really worth it.
I mean, online works so well on it, you know? I mean, it's just like such a better system than what they have available on the Switch. It's been like really cool just getting into voice chats there, making parties and like finding other friends from CGF in the group.
Yeah.
And like,
the reason why I mention that is just because I want to demonstrate that neither of us are opposed or averse to making game purchases. Neither of us are really in the habit of pirating games in general.
We could do that on PC, but instead we've bought, you know, close to 1,000 games probably, or more if you count older games.
Yeah, neither of us. I mean, I have not pirated a game on PC in many years.
Right.
Because there's kind of no need.
Right.
So, but anyway, Switch, this is kind of the reality of the situation. So now, man, I've just been having so much fun playing so many more games on Switch.
Right.
And a lot of games which I had wanted to play, but I mean, some, there's a lot of price gouging on Nintendo Switch.
Dude, Skyrim for like the, what, like millionth release of it or whatever, you know, like on every system. Yeah, $60 for a game that old. And it's like, doesn't even look as good as the other versions of the game that are being released now on other systems. Kind of seems like, I mean, at $40, maybe. you know, maybe. Yeah. But $60 is a little bit nuts, you know, for a game that old.
That's just one example, but man, there's so many of those. I mean, Doom is another one. Great game. From what I hear, it works excellent on Switch. That's awesome.
To be fair, that is a more recent game, though.
Yeah, so. That's true, but that game is like $5 on Steam.
Right.
It's so cheap.
And there's like tons and tons of games. I mean, Diablo 3 coming out at $60, still getting good reviews. If you haven't played it before, maybe makes sense. But $60 for a game that age also seems a bit much.
Yeah, and also there have been a lot of games which I see on Switch which I'm interested in, which look like a lot of fun. 1-2 Switch is an example of that. I think that game costs $50.
Right.
And it feels like all the reviews of it are bad. I mean, all the reviews are like, no way this is worth $50. Like, do not buy this game.
I think it's a price thing. That's the only thing with it. The game itself is fun, but like,
exactly.
If that was a $15 game, I imagine it would have like great reviews.
I really think it should be bundled with the Switch. But anyway,
if it was bundled with the Switch, that would be like what Wii Sports was, you know?
So I installed it and played it, and it's just so much fun. My girlfriend loves it. It's such a fun casual game. And that's just one example, but I mean, a lot of games like that where I feel like it looked like a lot of fun. I just wasn't willing to buy it. And now that I have it, I'm just really enjoying the game. It's not something I'm going to play for even 10 hours probably, but man, just a lot of fun.
It's fun to just pick up and play for a little bit here and there. And I'm sure you'll come back to it occasionally for a long time, probably. You probably won't put tons of hours into it because it's not that type of game.
Right.
But I'm sure it's something that both of us will revisit from time to time and not forget about.
Yeah, I feel that way also. So that game's been a lot of fun. One of the big reasons why we were interested in hacking the Switch was to be able to run emulator games on the Switch.
Right.
And my favorite platform for emulator games is RetroArch, even before the Switch. You know, I mean, RetroArch is what I prefer to use on my Windows PC, even though I have Launchbox. Launchbox is like kind of a bloated, labor intensive setup process. So for those who are interested in really creating like a detailed, arcade project, then I think Launchbox is the great way to do that, even better than RetroArch. But RetroArch is so easy, so simple, so fast. I mean, it's totally functional. And RetroArch was available on Switch incredibly quickly. I would say within 2 months of the Switch being cracked, RetroArch was already working and available.
People are getting increasingly better performance over it. They keep working on it. I mean, like, Tekken 3 is at like almost 60 frames per second, which is impressive, dude.
Yeah, so I played all the way through Contra 3 on RetroArch on Switch and had so much fun playing
save
that.
Save states.
Yeah, save states and rewind. Yeah. These are huge. Actually, just recently, within the last week, I feel like, was it the Sega Collection was announced? I think it's $40. It includes something like 40 games, I want to say.
Kind of seems cool, but once you've got RetroArch on there, it's like, dude.
Useless, of course. Yeah. No, yeah, it's funny because people in our WeChat group are like, oh, I'm totally going to get this Sega Collection. It's like,
and you
cool,
and
I've got
like
all 800 Genesis games, like, and I've already got all the functionality that it promises there. But save states and rewind are absolutely clutch. They really make a lot of those games so much more fun, so much more enjoyable. And playing through Contra 3, first of all, so I played the whole game on normal mode.
Yeah.
Super difficult. I mean, I never finished the game, right? I mean, if I knew anyone who finished the game without using save states or rewind, maximum respect to that person because it is a tough game.
Totally.
Finish the game, and then at the end, it's like, good job, but you only finished on normal. Try again on hard. I'm just like, oh my God, you didn't just do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, having save state and having rewind makes so many of these brutally difficult NES and SNES games and Genesis games also very playable, very enjoyable. Switch is just the perfect way to play these games.
Really? I mean, I haven't even got her. I mean, I got RetroArch, I think, running as an NSP before you did. You were still running through the homebrew launcher. I got her up and running, got things running smoothly, and that was cool. But I still haven't loaded up all of my ROMs and everything and set up some of the more difficult emulators like PlayStation and stuff. Just because, I mean, I just beat Celeste this last week. I've been having fun just like loading up NSPs on there and playing some of the Switch games. But I'm like really looking forward to like being able to dig in. I mean, I was playing like, what is it? Bart's Nightmare on Super Nintendo last week while I was getting some coffee. My girlfriend was doing some writing at a coffee shop, and I'm just booting up old Super Nintendo games.
Awesome.
And that was like such a joy, dude. The nostalgia from that and everything.
Yeah, you can split the Joy-Cons, play two-player.
That is so slick, dude, being able to do that. Like,
it really also has cool. net play. I haven't tried it, but you can play online, like emulator games.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, too. Both of us have been in disconnected from any online, though, just because we don't want to risk, you know, getting banned or super banned.
So the subject of bans is really interesting. So we should definitely talk about this. I mean, the chief downside to hacking your Switch, as we mentioned, is that you lose basically all online capability.
Right.
The reason why you lose it is because Nintendo has escalated its ban against people who modify the Switch. Right. So if you run unlicensed, the way that it works is, a lot of people at the beginning kind of thought that, oh, well, you can go into airplane mode and you can run RainX or Atmosphere and run whatever pirated software you want, and then you can boot into the stock firmware and then you can go online. But actually, Nintendo can detect this due to telemetry on the device,
right,
which means that it stores log files which record what kind of applications you've run and what the Switch has been doing. And when you go back into the stock firmware, it'll upload that telemetry data to Nintendo, and then they'll ban you based on that.
I mean, the only way to avoid it is to restore factory, like to do have a backup.
Right, the NAND backup.
Yeah, and do a factory restore of that.
And that seems like a huge pain, but that is possible if you want to do that. Perhaps in the future, there will be a better way to manage stock firmware and modified firmware.
Right.
So you can have both of these things at once. But for now, it seems like you have one or the other.
Now, it seems hit or miss. It's not like they're doing massive bans or have some sort of like system in place. Like I've heard reports of people who just turn off their system and boot back up into, you know, the original firmware and go online and do like Luigi's Balloon World or play Splatoon or whatever. And they do that countless times throughout the day and have not been banned.
You know,
and then there are people who have like not run any like NSPs or anything. They've only used it to like, they've used the custom firmware to play like RetroArch or something and only had like games that they bought on there. And they've gone online once and been banned.
Even now, it seems that there's a huge degree of randomness. A lot of people don't really know how and why their banning process works.
Do you know what happens when you get banned? Do you get like a notification on your Switch that's just like, bam, you're done.
Yes.
Like okay. Do you know what it says specifically?
It says Nintendo Online is not accessible or something like that.
Okay.
So one of the techniques which people use to avoid the ban is this service called 90DNS. Have you heard of this?
No.
So basically, there's a list of servers which Nintendo uses to authenticate Switches.
Right.
And you can block these by using this special DNS server. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you go into the network settings on your Switch, and instead of using your normal DNS, which would be like your router address,
right,
you use a specific DNS address, which is available online. And I can link to this in the show notes. This information is available on GitHub. And it's an open source you know, project, I guess, to prevent access to all these Nintendo authentication servers.
Right.
So this is one of the steps which people are using to prevent the ban. So 90DNS is one thing which you can use. I mean, if you're open to taking the chance, then you can just set that up and you can try to manage these two things. You're still running the risk of getting banned. But I mean, if you're running in airplane mode all the time, as both of us are, then getting banned doesn't really change anything anyway. I mean, ours is just a self-imposed ban.
Yeah.
With the hope that maybe one day we can go online and not be banned, you know, but maybe not. No one really knows. But presumably for now, neither of us are banned because neither of us have Switches that have been online in,
time. Mine did go online briefly after I cracked it to just try out the, I didn't go to the eShop or anything, but I did go to the Homebrew app store just to check that out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, what the fuck am I doing? I shouldn't be online. This is terrible. And I got offline. But, I mean, I didn't get any, like, email. I've, like, been able to successfully log into the eShop from, like, my web browser. Have no, like,
Oh, of course. I mean, the web browser, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know if my Switch has been banned or not because I haven't ever tried to access the eShop or anything, but
the only way to know is to try.
And then I and putting myself at risk by trying. So
right.
It's kind of like, No need to do that.
I feel the same way. I have noticed recently that there is a firmware update available. So one of the other downsides is if you get what's called a super ban. Super ban means that there's all the online functionality is totally cut off.
You including can't even get updates, right?
You can't get firmware updates for the console. You can't get game updates. You can't get the eShop. You can't obviously can't play any online multiplayer. Yeah. So every online, you know, function is totally disabled with a super ban. And some people have just a ban which affects online multiplayer in the eShop, but they still get game updates and they still get firmware updates.
Yeah.
And some people get a super ban. But you can update the firmware by yourself if you have a hacked Switch as we do. And I noticed that this newest version, I think, is 6.1.0.
Yeah.
And I found a download link. You can download it. You can install it. You can set it up yourself. I'm kind of wondering if it's really even worth it, though, because
somebody else said they had trouble after they updated and they like are having trouble booting into the custom firmware after they updated to 6.1.0.
Well, what I read, there's a change log online. It says general system stability improvements and resolved an issue where certain games don't recognize a Nintendo Switch online membership. So both of them seem like, yeah, my Switch is already stable enough and yeah. I'm not using Switch online. So is there any point? It seems like no.
Yeah. So.
So aside from that, I mean, really kind of no downside, just having a great time with the hacked Switch. So much so, in fact, my girlfriend is like playing the Switch most of the time. I mean, I got Kirby for her because
you never wanted to buy it, dude, but now that you've got it, she's enjoying it.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on the previous podcast that we downloaded the Kirby demo and she thought it was the best thing ever and I hated it. She was like, can you buy this? And I'm like, probably not, because it's $60 and you're probably just going to play it for like 2 hours and lose interest.
Yeah.
But it turns out she's actually playing it a lot, which works fine for me because I loaded it on there for her.
Yeah.
And so that's great. But this is kind of the joy of having access to this massive library of games. And the Switch library is really great. It's super really good.
Yeah. And even if it, you know, you don't see enough in there that, you know, is a like of your interest, you've got, I mean, I really want to put GBA games on there. There's tons of great games like Advance Wars and stuff that I would love to go back to and play. And that like seems like the perfect place to play them on the Switch. GBA games that are made for like on the go gaming, you know, so that'll be cool.
One of the games which has online functionality which I feel like I would like to have is Dark Souls.
Yeah,
but that game was delayed by I think over 6 months. It was supposed to come out in like April or something like that, so serious delay on Nintendo Switch. And then it got really good reviews, so it's good. Obviously, when we play it, there will be no online functionality there. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a downer, but that's one of the only cases I feel like where I would really like to have online functionality. You mentioned previously the balloon hunt feature in Mario Odyssey.
I love it, dude. I love it.
Yeah, I played it. Wasn't for me. I have no interest in it. Splatoon, I feel like maybe not a waste, but definitely didn't get $60 worth out of it, in my opinion.
At the same time, though, with games like Mario Kart and Splatoon, you can still do the majority of those games. All the online multiplayer components of it, with the exception of like Splatfest or stuff like that, unlocking all the gear and stuff you can't do. But you can still play like all of the online modes just by syncing up two Switches for the wireless play.
Yeah, that's true. So, I feel also like, probably not going to do that.
Probably you know? Not, but I'm just saying for people who are interested or whatever and who have friends who play those games, there's just still an option. You can still play Splatoon 2 with a full multiplayer team with a group of people who have Switches. It's yeah. an option for them.
Also, you won't be paying $60 for every copy of right. Splatoon 2, so that's kind of a bonus as well.
Definitely. So, of other note, though, I think we should mention that, you know, you mentioned we both have PS4s now.
Yeah.
I splurged and got one because of Red Dead coming out, which I have not got to spend as much time as I would like to in. But we're both enjoying that. And the online in that has been awesome. We both got this accelerator, which has made online like just work flawlessly pretty much here.
Yeah, well, we recorded a podcast, I guess, about a year ago on PUBG in China, and yeah. we both talked about an accelerator in China. In China, it's called a jiaosuqi. It's a common tool utility which people use for online games here, since online game performance for non-Chinese games can be really bad because of the Great Firewall. And so This specific device is made for consoles. It's made for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch.
Can work with PC supposedly too, but yeah. I haven't tried that.
Right. So it's a small little network device which connects to your router via the Cat5 Ethernet cable and wires into the PlayStation 4 or the Switch or whatever you have. And it really dramatically improves game performance
like
online.
Night and day, dude. I could not get... I mean, I caved. You convinced me to get Black Ops 4. Dude, you pulled me in with Black Ops 3 and now again with Black Ops 4.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I am enjoying Black Ops 4 a lot, but... when I got it, I could not connect to a single match. And as soon as I got the accelerator set up, no problem with any match, like instantaneous.
Yeah, totally blessed to have that.
Yeah.
Because I experienced the same thing. I bought the game. First of all, a friend of mine got a PlayStation 4 Pro and then gave me his old PlayStation 4. And then he said, Red Dead Redemption's coming out soon. You're probably going to want to get this. I was like, oh my God, what a nice thing to do. And then he got Black Ops 4 and he was like, you should get this game. We can play it online. And so I did. And I just had so many problems connecting online.
Cafe who gave you the PS4?
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. So I had so many problems connecting. Some of the games would work fine. And then a lot of times it wouldn't connect. And he got the accelerator and it worked for him. And he was like, check this out. I got that. And since then, basically zero problems.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Well, zero problems except for that guy last night in Black Ops 4 making the game go on forever.
Has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So but, anyway, yeah, having the accelerator is really nice. And also just nice to have a console with functional online capabilities, unlike the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I mean, I have really enjoyed just being able to send messages, party up on there. Like it works well, you know, it does the things it's supposed to. And I have no like issues with it. I would not want to give any of that up because it does what it's supposed to. And it has been fun. And that is going to be a big component of my gaming on the PS4 is going to be online, I think. Now, you mentioned Dark Souls and not being able to do that. We both just got Bloodborne, and we can go ahead and give that a shot, which I think should work well on the PS4 and be a similar experience to Dark Souls.
Yeah, I think the thing is, if you just have a Nintendo Switch and you have no other, you don't have a PC, you don't have Steam, you don't have PlayStation, then maybe that's your only option for online games. But for people who are not in that situation, I feel like Nintendo Switch Online is just not something that is very important at all.
Yeah, it just doesn't work the way that like it does on other platforms. So like for us, where we've both got PS4s now, we've got Windows set up for tons of games, and we don't have the hassle that we have in Windows games, you know? Like
right.
Even for we were talking about the people playing Black Ops 4 on PC, they're also using accelerators. They're still having trouble and difficulty playing online on PC, and we're just like getting into games left and right.
Yeah, there's just a lot of hassle, I guess. There's some more
the ease of
friction.
Use
there's some more turbulence with Windows gaming.
I mean, console gaming, just the ease of use is great. I mean, woo, PC Master Race. Cool, dude, but like it's just not as simple as console gaming, that's for sure.
Totally. So that's been really good. And the latest controversy, which we wanted to talk about at least briefly on here, involves Blizzard, the formerly god tier developer.
Yeah, dude.
And Diablo.
I don't think they're ever gonna like recover their image. I mean, it's been a gradual downfall for them for a while. You mentioned your view of them a while back and just like kind of cloning TF2, cloning LOL, cloning
Magic. Let's start off at the beginning and describe what's going on here. Why don't you explain?
Okay. I mean, describe the controversy that happened today. So what, at BlizzCon, right? BlizzCon just happened and, they had a lot of, I think, relatively favorable announcements that were met with praise from a lot of fans.
New Hearthstone advance, new Hearthstone, package, whatever it's called. Yeah. Expansion, I guess. This is like the fifth expansion, maybe, of Hearthstone. That was well received.
They had some new characters, I think, announced for Overwatch.
Heroes of the Storm, new stuff as well.
They've got a Overwatch serial.
They got a Warcraft 3 remaster.
Yeah, which is, I think that's probably one of the most favorable things they announced.
I think so, too.
We're pretty happy about. And that is pretty cool. Excited. That's cool, dude.
Yeah, I'd prefer Warcraft 2. As I mentioned, we talked about this last week and kind of speculating what they would announce at BlizzCon.
Right.
I would prefer a Warcraft 2 remaster, but Warcraft 3 remaster, I'd still buy it.
I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah, I'll still buy it. You know, I still think it's cool. StarCraft remaster, I bought that. It's working out great.
We've been meeting up pretty regularly to play that. That's been fun. We've been finding out how bad I am at RTS games, which
pretty
has
bad.
Been, yeah, pretty bad.
But it's like StarCraft's been rejuvenated, you know, 20 years later. It's amazing.
It's great. And then we have the last announcement of them saying, hey guys, so we got this Diablo Immortals or something. And they've got this CGI cutscene that they show announcing the game and all this stuff. And then they're all like, mobile game. And the crowd literally boos. And
I think that's the first time the crowd has ever booed at BlizzCon.
Right, dude. And somebody stands up in the crowd and
asks, did a Q&A.
Yeah.
What a terrible idea. Usually when I see Q&As like that, I feel like those questions have been screened. These are not real questions. That event proved that I am totally wrong.
Dude.
None of these questions have been screened because the questions were amazing.
Yeah, it was like, is this some sort of out of season April Fool's joke?
Yeah.
What a legend, dude.
What a legend.
So good. And
yeah, that guy's immortalized within the Blizzard community. Yeah. These are all like Blizzard super fans, by the way, who paid to go to BlizzCon.
Yeah. And the response to it was pretty bad, dude. You've got this Chinese guy wearing his Diablo shirt. And now we should mention that I believe it's a Chinese game. It's a reskin of a Chinese game by NetEase.
The guy announcing is just ethnic Chinese. He's American.
Right. Anyway, so he's all like, we think it's going to be really good and blah, blah. And then people are like, but it's a mobile game. And he responds with like, but you all have phones, right? And somebody posted a meme in the group that I think really phones that point home. That's like, do you like anal? And the guy responding with, but you all have butts, right? You all have butts. It's like, just because we have it doesn't mean that we like it, you know?
Was
like,
that a joke? I don't remember seeing that. That's
weird.
Yeah,
somebody posted a meme being like, but I don't like anal sex. And him being like, but you have a butt. You know, it's like, just because we have it doesn't mean that we have to like it, you know? Like, yeah, I have a phone. I know you, like, enjoy mobile games from time to time. And I've spent your time exploring the App Store. And I've found some really great games. I don't really game on my phone. I mean, when I do on the go game,
Diablo is just not a phone game. Yeah, I think that's the issue. I mean, it's not like Angry Birds or a casual game. Diablo has always been like a pretty hardcore PC game. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even for them to port it to consoles was like controversial at the time.
Right.
They managed to pull that off and good for them. Also, Diablo 3 just came out on Switch and is very well received.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, maybe they could pull it off, but I think using the Diablo IP was like wrong.
Terrible idea. And also, it's a reskinned Chinese game.
Yeah.
I can't recall the name, but there's a NetEase game which has the exact same user interface.
It just doesn't seem like a good idea. And like the massive outcry against it, most dislike, breaking records for most dislikes ever on YouTube.
Did you see the numbers? It's like 300,000 downvotes or something like that.
And like 8,000.
No, sorry. It must be 3 million. It's like 300K.
I think it was 351,000 downvotes or something and like 18,000 upvotes.
No, it was 350K.
Yeah, shit. It's a crazy number.
Yeah, though. Anyway, crazy number. The ratio of downvotes to upvotes, I think, is unprecedented.
And then Blizzard's like, you know, slyly thinking we can just like take this down and re-upload it and change the links and stuff so that they can like make it seem as if this is not happening.
Right.
You know, but
they're concealing all the hate,
which is sketchy as fuck, dude. Like, I mean, it's just like, it goes to show that they're very well aware of the fact that people don't want this and they're going to do it and just try to cover up the fact that people don't like it and make it have a better public image. But
have you seen the gaming media reaction to this event?
No.
So all the big gaming journalists who are like the verified Twitter personalities are all like, this is disgusting hate. This is an extension of toxic masculinity. This is like angry neckbeards who are just like railing against Blizzard for no reason. It's really incredible to see gaming journalists all take Blizzard's side in this. There's a huge divide between the community
and
the
media.
The press. Yeah. Yes. and the press seems to all be siding with Blizzard and saying, this is no big deal. This is online community is like making a big deal out of something which is really trivial. It's really fascinating to see this divide between the two.
Blizzard's got to be paying the money for the like praise, though.
I'm not sure. It's hard to say. But in any case, there is just incredible fury over this situation. And it seems like Blizzard's going to sustain very serious reputational damage.
I mean, at first I was kind of like, well, what's the big deal? I mean, they're still going to put out other games and stuff. But I think someone raised a really valid point is that what if this is like, they're just trying to make it a mobile game and like there is no next Diablo?
Well, actually, Blizzard has already come out and said that there are, multiple Diablo projects in development. So clearly what they're saying is, because also one of the other questions that the Q&A was, did you hear this question? I saw the whole Q&A, which is like 20 minutes long. And one of the questions was, how will this affect, are there other Diablo projects in development and how will this mobile game affect their development? Right. Which is a great question, which is such a good question. Obviously, they can't answer it, but what it says is that this is not what we want. Are we going to get what we want?
Right.
That's like the real question, which like 99% of the audience really wants to know.
Yeah.
And there's no answer for that. No one really knows.
Now, I think for a long time, like I said, Blizzard has not been, I mean, Overwatch, all of these games are, they used to, as you said earlier today in our conversation, they haven't done anything original in years. You know, I mean, they've done quality games. Hearthstone is great. Overwatch is fantastic, but they are not like really innovative and unique games.
They're all derivative games, is what I said earlier. Overwatch is derivative of Team Fortress 2. Hearthstone is an improved version of Magic the Gathering. Heroes of the Storm is an improved version of League of Legends. I mean, improved, like, depending on you know what you value. But it basically all three of those games all came out within the same window of a couple years, and all of them were so heavily based on other games. And I feel like I grew up with the original Warcraft, Warcraft 2, World of Warcraft, StarCraft, Diablo, and all of these games were trendsetters. They were all pioneers. They were the games which other developers were copying. And now it seems like Blizzard has totally switched roles into now Blizzard is the one kind of improving and iterating on other people's ideas rather than on charting new territory and, you know, blazing new trails. It feels like those days may be over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they are ever going to recover their image of their former glory. I don't think that there's anything that they are realistically going to do at this point with the, with Chinese companies being major investors, with them being kind of a part of, they're part of EA Activision or whatever now, right?
Activision,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like all of these larger companies, I don't see them ever from a business standpoint making the decisions that would make the fans happy. You know, they're never going to regain that former glory. So like to me, yeah, there's still decent games coming out of the company. Who knows? Maybe Diablo Immortal could be okay and they could potentially release this great Diablo 4 at some point. But I don't think that their image is ever going to recover from this. They're going to continue to make decisions like Diablo Immortal that out, you know, fans are going to cry out against. And they're going to have this horrible, horrible method of dealing with it. You know?
Well, it's been 6 years since Diablo 3 came out. So people are ready for a new major Diablo. real Diablo. And so they have BlizzCon. And so they get on stage. They play the reel. And they're like, new Diablo. And people go crazy.
Yeah.
And then they're like, available on iOS and Google Play. And people are like, what?
What?
Yeah, people just lose their minds. They're like, are you kidding? Oh, my God. Like, they just can't believe this.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine, you know, what did Blizzard think would happen?
Yeah.
It's just incredible that they went on stage and prepared all this and could not foresee how this would obviously just be a total catastrophe.
Yeah, but you all have phones.
Don't you guys have phones? How? This doesn't make any sense at all. It's like you can't figure it out. It's like, do you really need someone to explain this?
How can
you be on stage talking about Diablo and not understand this?
Like, do you think that the presenters before they went up there were like, dude, this is going to be so good today. These guys are going to love it.
That's a great question. That is such a good question. I really wonder, what did people think of this before this? There had to be people within the organization who were like, this is a terrible idea, but Activision are our overlords and we do whatever they say.
Right.
NetEase makes a ton of money in China and we'll do whatever NetEase wants us to do because that's what shareholders demand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure there must be a lot of people who don't like that.
The people presenting it, do you think before they went up there were like, this is going to be bad, but like, I got to swallow my pride because this is my job and I just got to take the flames. Or do you think like those presenters actually thought it would be okay?
I have no idea, but it is fascinating to watch the Q&A in particular, where that guy is just undergoing incredible stress and pressure.
Yeah, he
where
there's seemed like baffled.
There's too. Like thousands of people looking at him like, we are so angry right now. And you can tell that he knows that he's in front of a lot of people who do not like him.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to manage that situation, trying to deal with questions which he knows he cannot answer.
He looked
talking
baffled.
talking about unannounced Diablo projects, which I'm sure there's Diablo 4 in development. He can't talk about it. He can't mention it. He has no power to really answer these questions. Just incredibly unfortunate, unnecessary, just bad situation. Just very discouraging to see.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Speaking of which, dude, we also brought up Elder Scrolls today. Another company, you know, former giant that seems
Bethesda.
To be... Yeah, Bethesda that seems to be
lost going, its way.
Not as bad as Blizzard's debacle today, but questionable the path that they're going down. And you know, Elder Scrolls 6 could be... Their last, I don't think as a business they're going to fail, but this could be their last shot at like redemption of maintaining that image as like a god in the industry, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there may no longer be a god in the industry, the god tier developer that they used to be, like Valve or Bethesda or Blizzard.
If they deliver with the Elder Scrolls 6, it's potential to maybe, you know, redeem themselves a bit, but I don't see it being likely, dude, with like CD Projekt Red and Cyberpunk coming out. There's no way that... I mean, I just realistically don't see Elder Scrolls delivering what Cyberpunk is going to deliver.
Maybe, but I mean, you have no idea.
I have no idea.
There's nothing released at all, so no
it's
one really
possible.
Knows.
It's possible, but the hype. Oh, the hype for Cyberpunk, man. That, I mean, I'm feel fairly confident that's going to deliver, and the hype is real.
Yeah, no doubt. Anything else to mention before we wrap this up on hacking the Switch or on Wizards Catastrophe or anything else?
We pretty much talked about current news. Everybody knows what we're playing right now. PS4 primarily.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah, that stuff's real. We're going
to
talk about
that. Yeah, we're
going
to have to record another episode about Red Dead Redemption 2. Yeah. We'll go into detail on that. Basically, this is my game of the year, no question. I think nothing else even comes really close.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed some other games this year. In upcoming podcasts, we'll be talking about our favorite games of 2018. Mm. I'm looking forward to recording that. But Red Dead Redemption 2, absolutely amazing. I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, cool.
Great. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. You can find previous episodes of the podcast on iTunes or on our website at chundugaming.com. If you're interested in finding more information about hacking the Switch in particular, you can look for that episode on the website or on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Later.